So this week's parsha is Parshas Vayeshev, which begins on page 198. We're also coming up to Hanukkah, so I hope to try to tie it into Hanukkah a bit. We'll begin with the beginning of the parsha. It's on page 198 in the Stone Chumash, if you have one. So this parsha begins with the story of Yosef and his brothers, Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Megurei Aviv Eretz Canaan. Jacob settled in the land of his father, sojournings in the land of Canaan. Ela told us, Yaakov, these are the chronicles of Jacob. Yosef ben Shva Esrei Shana, Hoyo Roetz Echel Batzon. Yosef, at the age of 17 years, was a shepherd with his brothers by the flock. But he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Yosef would bring evil reports about them to their father. Now, we know the story. Well, actually, let's just read one more pasuk here. Rabbi Yisrael, Oav, it's Yosef, we call Bonov. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons. He vents kunim holo, since he was a child of his old age. Also lo kisonas pasim, and he made him a fine woolen tunic. Okay, so I want to just zero in. There's a lot to talk about this section, obviously, but I want to zero in tonight on one main point here. We have the description of Yosef as a 17-year-old, and it's the pasuk description says a few things about Yosef, and it says that his father loved him more than the rest of the sons, and gave him the tunic. And then afterwards, it says the brothers hated him, and we know how things turned out. The couple of words here, Rashi says on the words v'hu nar, it's somewhat of a puzzling phrase. Yosef was a youth. I mean, obviously, he was 17 years old. He was a youth. So what does that mean? He was a youth. So Rashi says v'hu nar means shahaya osa ma'ase narus, that he was acting in a youthful way. The way art school translates the Rashi is, the Torah calls him a youth, implies that he acted immaturely. Unar, that's how they translate it. Nairus, I guess that's the way it's probably understood. He acted youthful, or he acted immaturely. And what way was he acting immaturely? Misakim, misairo, mimashmish, of dressing his hair and adorning his eyes, Kadeshi Yanir Yafa, to look handsome. So it seems that one of the things that the Torah was describing by Yosef, and perhaps 100% clear, but it would seem reasonable to say that this was one of the things that got Yosef into trouble, so to speak, was the fact that he was paying a lot of attention to his physical appearance. His hair, his eyes, to appear handsome. And it's possible that, it's very plausible, especially since the Torah seems to be making an issue out of this, that's part of what the reason why the brothers were very suspicious of Yosef. That Yosef was not according to their view, which obviously they didn't have an accurate view of Yosef, but in their view, Yosef was not acting in a way that's appropriate for one of the sons of Yaakov. He was paying, even though he was young, but I suppose when they, he wasn't that much younger than some of them. And probably his brothers weren't acting that way when they were 17 years old. So he was acting in a specific way that they felt was inappropriate. So it seems. And that being the case, we have to understand, was it really inappropriate? We always understand that if Yosef was one of the 12 Shvatim whose names were inscribed on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, obviously Yosef wasn't just a typical 17-year-old. He was obviously on a much higher spiritual level, much higher spiritual sensitivity than a typical 17-year-old would be. And even so, he was paying all that attention to his physical appearance. So what was that all about? What was the root of this misunderstanding between the brothers and Yosef around this idea of his paying attention to his appearance to the degree that he did? That's the one question I wanted to ask. Another thing, and along the same lines, just follow this line a little bit later on in the parasha, we have Yosef's appearance coming into play once again in a way that got him into trouble again. And that is, if we go to follow with me, on page 214, we have after Yosef was sold down to Egypt, and he was sold to Potiphar, and
Rabbi, your audio is cutting out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why.
When you turn to your left, it says.
Oh, okay. So I better not turn to my left. Okay.
I don't know if everybody else has that same.
Okay.
Problem.
Okay. So anyway, then when it says Yosef, I'm sorry. So it's talking about Yosef and his master's house in Egypt. He left, his master left all that he had in Joseph's custody. And then at the end of the pasuk, it says, "Be'yihi Yosef, your face so are b'fei Mara." Now Yosef was handsome of form and handsome of appearance. And the very next pasuk, Yosef gets into trouble here. I mean, he gets into trouble in the sense that, He was subjected to some temptation where the pasuk says, after these things, his master's wife cast her eyes upon Yosef and she said, "Lie with me." But as an introduction to that, the Torah emphasizes Yosef's handsomeness. And Rashi explains, interestingly, that it wasn't just that Yosef was handsome, but the pasuk is emphasizing that because Yosef was again paying attention to his appearance. The Salso Basairo actually says again he was paying attention to his hair. And it's interesting what Rashi continues, and he says, Hashem said, your father is mourning over you and you're busying yourself with your hair. And that's why, and that was the reason why Hashem allowed Yosef to be subjected to this very painful kind of temptation that he was subjected to. So again, Yosef is busy with his appearance. Now I've seen it pointed out, which if you look carefully at Rashi, it seems like Yosef wasn't blamed for being concerned with his appearance per se. He was only blamed for it because, excuse me, it was inappropriate considering that his father was in mourning. But in general, it wouldn't have been necessarily a problematic thing that he was doing. But again, it does seem though that Yosef's appearance was getting him into trouble, and specifically his concern with his appearance. Now that being said, we find something very, very surprising, which I saw pointed out in some contemporary work, but I think he makes a very strong point. In part for this, we'll have to look again. If you have your Chumash, it may be worthwhile to take a look some weeks down the line, we have Parshas Vayechi. In Parshas Vayechi, we have Yaakov, we have Jacob giving, calling his sons around before he dies and blessing them. So, in on page, if you have the Chumash, it will be on page 280. We find something very fascinating with the way Yaakov characterizes his son Yosef, which was his favorite son, at least initially. What's the first thing Yaakov says about Yosef? So it's on page 280, Pasichav Beit, on page 21-22. Bein Poras Yosef, a charming son is Yosef. Bein Poras Ale Oyin, a charming son to the eye. Bonos Tsoado Ale Shur, each of the girls climbed heights to gaze. So Yaakov Avinu, before he dies, Yosef was already, he wasn't the 17-year-old youth anymore. He was already a full grown mature man with a family. And Yaakov Avinu, before he dies, one of his last things he says to his son Yosef is, "Oh Yosef, you're so handsome. All the girls want to look at you. What is the, like, that's what Yaakov has to say about Yosef." He continues, he says more, but that's the first thing that he's telling Yosef. It seems that that's something very fundamental. There's something very fundamental about Yosef's life that's characterized by the fact, by his physical beauty. And the question is, what is that? Normally we would think that that's not, maybe I'm thinking like Yosef's brothers thought about Yosef. Like, why are we being so concerned with the externals? With that, that's so important about Yosef, the externals. How are we supposed to understand that? So those are the questions I really wanted to discuss. Maybe I'll just add one more question, which is maybe the beginning of the answer. And that is, besides Yosef's concern with his physical appearance, we find that even from, and Yaakov, I guess, at his, before his death, describing Yosef's physical appearance, in some sense, we see Yaakov already from the beginning, feeding into Yosef's, the stress on Yosef's physical appearance. And that's, when he gave him the Ksonas Pasim, he gave him this coat, this attractive tunic. And he singled out Yosef to give him that. And that was maybe part problematic. But why did Yaakov do that? Why was Yaakov giving Yosef, a father? I'm thinking now. If we have a father wants to give his son a gift, even if he has a favorite son, which the Gemara says that we should be careful not to play favorites with our sons, or those are the lessons we're supposed to learn from this story. But if a father wants to give his son, let's say he has an only son, and he wants to give him a gift. So the gift, it would seem, should be something that reflects the values of the father and the values of the family. I remember reading about, I forgot who it was, but I remember reading about a certain great man that he gave his son a bar mitzvah gift, and his son's bar mitzvah gift, what did he give his son? He gave his son a watch. And he told his son, "This is your most valuable thing, time. There's nothing more valuable than time." Okay? So that's a gift with a deep, meaningful message for a son. Yaakov gives his son a beautiful coat. What's the message? Look beautiful? What? Why is he giving Yosef a beautiful son, a beautiful coat? So, those are pretty much the questions I want to ask. It's just briefly recap them. What is the, it's all along the same lines, but what is what was this misunderstanding between Yosef and his brothers regarding Yosef's stress on his physical appearance. And if Yosef is, keeps on getting himself into trouble because of his physical appearance, both with his brothers and later on with the wife of Potiphar, why is his father, both, I guess we can say from the beginning till the end, seem to be going along with this idea that Yosef, of Yosef's stress along with the physical appearance, both by giving him the beautiful coat at the beginning and by talking about it all the way at the end before he dies? Okay, those are the questions we want to get to right now. As Hashem this evening. So before I try to start giving a little bit of an approach to understand this, I want to share with you a story. Some of you may have heard.
Can you stop it?
No.
Thank you very much.
Sorry. Some of you may have heard this story, but when someone, there was a talk that someone gave the other night about the great sage Rabbi David Feinstein, who's Shloshim, since his passing was just today or yesterday or something like that. But there's a fascinating anecdote, a story that I heard some other people heard from someone who was involved with this firsthand. I'd like to tell you this story because it's really something highly unusual, and I think it ties in very much to the point we're trying to make tonight. And the story goes as follows. A number of the students of this Rabbi David Feinstein wanted to buy him a gift. And the gift that they asked him if he would like it is silver tefillin covers. That they asked him if he wanted covers for his tefillin. People typically use plastic covers for their tefillin. There are some people that have silver colored covers for their tefillin. It's not very common, but there are some people that do. So they asked him, would he like to have silver covers for his tefillin? What can you get a great sage that he would appreciate? Something to enhance a mitzvah. So that's what they asked him. And he said, yeah, he expressed interest. He said, oh, if you want to get me a gift, get me that. That would be great. So they bought him that gift. Sometime later, one of the people who was involved in buying the gift, who was the person who was repeating this story, he was in the shul, in the yeshiva, actually, where Rabbi Feinstein davened. And Rabbi Feinstein was taking out his tefillin. So he was looking forward. The person who bought the gift was one of the people that bought the gift, was looking forward to seeing Rabbi Feinstein take out the silver tefillin covers. Rabbi Feinstein opens up his tefillin bag and he takes out the tefillin and this person was watching, was very disappointed. He didn't see any silver tefillin covers. He saw regular plastic tefillin covers. But then, after a few seconds, he saw that Rabbi Feinstein took off the plastic tefillin covers, and underneath the plastic tefillin covers were the silver tefillin covers. That was the story. Now, this story is kind of astounding. I'll try to unpack it a little bit, why I find it so astounding. I think if you offer somebody silver tefillin covers, there are one of two reactions that you'll get. Some people would say, great, silver tefillin covers, that's phenomenal, okay? And they'll take the silver tefillin covers and they'll put the tefillin into it, and then everybody's going to see that they have silver tefillin covers. That's one kind of reaction. Then there's another kind of reaction. The other kind of reaction is someone who doesn't want to look different than anybody else, okay? And that person will say, no, still, silver tefillin cover is not for me. Okay? That's another kind of reaction. Both of those reactions, I think, are quite common. You would find many people that would jump at the opportunity to have silver tefillin covers, and then you'll have many people who would very much shy away of having silver tefillin covers. But to have someone who appreciates the silver tefillin covers, but hides them so he shouldn't be flouting them or flaunting them, whatever the word is, in front of other people, That's something highly unusual. Highly unusual. We're going to get back to Yosef in a moment. So let me tell you something from the Gemara. The Gemara, I forgot where the Gemara is right now. The Gemara talks about a certain point in history, probably around 2,000 years ago or so, that there was a gathering of the sages, and they decided, because of certain things that were going on in the Jewish world at the time, they wanted to add a bracha to the Shemona Esrei. That means there were, until then, the Shemona Esrei had 18 brachas. That's what Shemona Esrei means. And those had been composed much earlier by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. But at this point in history that the Gemara is discussing, they wanted to add one more bracha. And that's the bracha which we have today in Shemona Esrei that starts with the words, "V'lamalshinim al tehisikva," to the slanderers, there should be no hope. And it ends off with the bracha, with the Baruch to Hashem, Shover Oivim Machnia Zedim. Hashem breaks the enemies and subdues the Zedim, the haughty maybe or something like that. I don't know. I don't have my art scroll sitter in front of me. I don't know the exact English translation. But the idea is they wanted someone, they felt that there was a need because there was this tremendous harassment by certain negative kinds of people, and they felt they needed to make a bracha to ask Hashem to protect those people, and actually to subdue those people, show them, to break them. So they made an announcement, and they said, they asked a question by this meeting: who's the person that can compose Birchas Aminim? Who's the person who can compose the bracha to bring destruction upon the enemy? And it says they all decided there's only one person can do it, and that was someone who was called Shmuel HaKatan. Shmuel the Small, he was called. Now, why this person, Shmuel HaKatan? The Gemara doesn't really explain why, but they all agreed it must be Shmuel HaKatan. So the one and an explanation that's given, I don't remember who says this, but this is a well-known explanation, is that in Pirkei Avos, we have a statement of Shmuel HaKatan. Shmuel HaKatan said, "B'nefol oivecha al tismach." When your enemies fall, do not rejoice. And it continues. And there's a question everybody asked in that Mishnah, because this statement of Shmuel HaKatan is actually not a statement that originates with Shmuel HaKatan at all. It's a statement that comes, I believe it's from Mishlei. From Proverbs, from Shlomo HaMelech. And yet, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Shmuel HaKatan Omer. Was Shmuel HaKatan plagiarizing? Chas v'shalom. So was Pirkei Avos attributing it to something, to a secondary source? Why not to the primary source? So the answer that's given is that, of course, Shmuel HaKatan knew that this was from Mishlei. And of course, Pirkei Avos knew that it was from Mishlei. But the reason why it's recorded in the name of Shmuel HaKatan is because this was Shmuel HaKatan's motto in life. "B'nefol oivecha al tismach." Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. So now, let's go back to this meeting of the sages. They said, someone's going to have to compose a bracha, a tefillah, a prayer to destroy people that we need to have destroyed. Who's going to compose that? Now, this is a big problem, because if somebody is going to compose a prayer that the Jewish people for all time is going to have to stand in front of Hashem, are going to be standing in front of Hashem and asking to destroy those people, if this prayer has to be totally pure. Now, what do I mean totally pure? Meaning that there can't be any mixture of bad character, of impure motives anywhere in this, at least in the text of the prayer. And when we're talking about destroying people, that's something that is, it's very easy, it's very dangerous, that should elicit some impure kinds of of feelings and some not correct kinds of motivations that can get mixed in there. And then if it's not totally pure, it doesn't belong in Ashmanasri. And they said, who can compose something that we can be certain that there's only the purest of motives and therefore it's not going to go off base, at least from the text, as far as the text is concerned, it's not going to elicit any kind of wrong applications of this desire to destroy. So they all agreed that there's only one person that can do it, and that's Shmuel HaKotan. Because Shmuel HaKotan was the one who lived his life with the words, "Benfol Eivecha Al Tismach." Don't rejoice when your enemy falls. In other words, yes, when an enemy falls, there's perhaps reason to rejoice, but there's also rejoicing when over somebody's downfall is something that plays into the negative character traits of people. And therefore, Shmuel HaKotan was constantly purifying his own character to the point that he's not going to have any negative rejoicing on the downfall of others. And therefore, he and only he could be the one who actually gets involved in composing a prayer for other people's destruction. So what does this all have to do with what we're talking about here? Because I think the same concept applies to something like beauty. The pasuk says, we all familiar with the pasuk Eishes Chayil, Sheker Hachein VeHevel Hayofi. Charm is false. Beauty is hevel. It's vanity or something like that, futile. And so beauty is something it could be very dangerous, especially if it's focused on too much. The focus on externals and external beauty specifically is something that can easily mislead a person. It can easily get a person or other people, whether the person himself or the people around them, it can easily pull a person in directions which are negative because it's attractive, and it can attract to something in an external way, which is not, which can pull away from the really important and meaningful things in life. That's the danger of external beauty. Sheker Hachein VeHevel Hayofi. However, like the pasuk continues, Isha Yiras Hashem, he tesalel, a woman who fears Hashem, she could be praised. And the way some commentaries at least explain means that if someone has fear of Hashem, so what that means is that the fear of Hashem keeps everything in its proper place, within its proper focus. Yes, there's a Greek value. We'll get to that, Bez Hashem, soon. I hope I have time to. But what am I saying? It's Yiras Hashem keeps the proper focus, and therefore, it's only when someone has the proper focus of Yiras Hashem, then they can take the external beauty and actually use it the right way. So the connection I'm saying is that Shmuel HaKotan can take the idea of destroying evil, which is a necessary thing, but only he can do it because he's the one that can keep it in focus. He's the one that can keep it within the proper boundaries. So the same thing applies to the focus on externals. The focus on external beauty is only not dangerous and only not false and actually can become even praiseworthy if it's in the context of Yiras Hashem. If it's in the context of the fear of Hashem, which is what gives the proper boundary and focus to it and doesn't allow it to pull the person out in all kinds of other directions. Yosef was actually, and we'll see in next week's parsha that Yosef, first of all, we find even at the end of this week's parsha, Yosef had the ability to decipher dreams. both we had at the end of the parsha with the Sarah Mashim, Sarah Ofim, the chief butler, chief baker. At the beginning of the next week's parsha, we have Paro's dreams. And Paro gave Yosef a name, which is recorded in the Torah. He called him Tzofnas Paneach. Tzofnas Paneach means something like the one who uncovers what's hidden. Tzofnas, the word, it comes from the Tzofon, which means hidden. And Paneach means, Rashi says that there's no, it's an unusual word, Paneach, but it means something like to decipher, to uncover that which is hidden. Yosef's midah was that he was able to see past the externals. He was able to see through the externals. He was able to see what's inside of things. We find, and the same thing applies even in interpersonal relations. At the end of this parasha, we have Yosef, seeing the Sarah Mashkim, Sarah Ofim, the chief butler and the chief baker, and he says to them, Madua Pnechem Roem Ayom, why is your face down? Why do you look down? It means Yosef was somebody who was able to look at somebody's face and realize there's something going on inside. He was able to see beyond the externals and see that there's something beneath the surface. That's what Yosef's midah was. Someone who's, so let me go back to the beginning of the parasha now for a moment, okay? Yosef was 17 years old and he was paying attention to his appearance. Why was he paying attention to his appearance? So I saw in Sfarim, my Rebbe, Reb Chaim Mintzweiss, this in the Sefer, but I think it's very reasonable to understand this. Yosef was paying attention to his appearance because Yosef understood that his physical appearance that Hashem gave him, his natural beauty that Hashem gave him, has a purpose. And he understood what the purpose was. He understood the purpose wasn't for Sheker Hachain Behevel Hayofi. It wasn't for the falseness and the vanity that other people often get carried away with their externals. No, as we see later in the parsha, when Yosef was confronted with a temptation to use his beauty for things that are immoral, he's the prototype for the person for all times. He's the one that the Jewish people look up to as someone who's able to control that area and able not to get to allow the externals to bring him, make him lose focus and to bring him to places where he shouldn't be. So even Yosef, even from the very beginning, whenever he was paying attention to the externals, it was only because Yosef understood that he has a future in leadership, and a leader, the Gemara tells us, a melech, a king, has to look beautiful. In the Mishnah, it says in Yuma that he's allowed to wash his face on Yom Kippur, a melech, according to one opinion, because a king is supposed to look beautiful. So Yosef understood, and rightfully so, that he had a future in leadership, and therefore a leader needs to pay special attention to his appearance in order to be able to properly and most properly influence people for the good. And there's no question that that's what was going on. Those kinds of things, I can't read Yosef's mind, but something like that is in the sense that it was the internal value that can be, that the beauty can be put at the service of, that's what Yosef was focusing on. But his brothers, they saw something else. Because Yosef was someone who, his father gave him a ksonas patsim. Yosef was someone who had the ability not to be sidetracked by his beauty much more than most people. That's why Yaakov at the end of his life, both at the beginning of Yosef, but beginning over here when Yosef was 17 and at the end of his life, was pointing at Yosef's beauty because he was saying, you, Yosef, you're the one who has the ability to be the, like the Isha Yeres Hashem Hitesalo. You have the fear of Hashem that's able to keep the beauty in check, and therefore it should be only totally harnessed in the service of the Pnimius, of what's inside, to be able to not to be distracted by the outer beauty and to make it into some kind of a intrinsic value, but rather to see what's beneath the surface, to see what kind of deeper internal value could be furthered by using that external beauty. And that's what was a big part of what Yosef's job was throughout his life, was seemingly this. And that's why Yaakov gave him a Ksonas Pasim from the very beginning, because he was telling Yosef, this is your mission in life. Your mission in life is, because I see that you can stand up to the job. You're the Shmuel HaKatan. You're the one who's not going to be distracted, who's not going to allow the externals to cloud your vision and distract you from what's really valuable in life. And like Mark pointed out before, this is really a big theme for Hanukkah, because the Greeks put like Mark just said, the Greeks put great value into external beauty, and part of the in Greek culture, the war, the culture war, culture kampf, whatever it's called, the cold war of cultures between the Greek culture and the Torah culture, which was really, really the underlying theme of what was going on there between in the war between the Hashmonaim and the Yevanim, between like we say in the Alanisim, it was Tameim Beyat Tahorim. There was The Greeks are described in our Shmoneh Esrei as tmeim, as impure, and the Chashmonaim are described as pure, tahorim. The idea of impure and pure is this idea, I think, that the Greeks were very focused on the external things like external beauty, but without the Yiras Hashem Yitzhak. So they were focused in a way that pulls a person towards the sheker, towards the falsehood, towards the vanity. That's tmeim. There's something impure about that. It's a hollow shell. It's an empty shell. If you just look at the externalities without looking at what kind of real things of real value can be furthered by that. Whereas the miracle of Hanukkah is the miracle of the oil, like it says, they found a one little flask of oil that was sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Gadol is the I think the Maharal says, if I remember correctly, the Kohen Gadol is the only one that goes into the Holy of Holies. He goes Lefnai v'Lefnim. He goes all the way inside to the innermost chamber of the Beis HaMikdash, because the Kohen Gadol is the one who symbolizes the pure inner meaning of the world. And that was the oil that they found. They found this pure oil, and the more a person is attached to the purity of the inner oil of the Kohen Gadol, that's how we can be victorious over the Greeks, who just put everything on the external. So the idea over here is that, yes, the external, what's interesting is that the Gemara tells us in some somewhere, based on the pasuk in Parshas Noach, where Noach is talking to his sons, and he says, Yafto lekim leYefes. He talks about his son Yefes. Yefes, the word Yefes itself is related to the word Yofi, beauty. He had a son, Yefes, and Yefes, the Pasuk says, was the father of Yavon. Yavon, Greece, was from Yefes. And the Noach told his son that the way Gemara interprets it is that the beauty of Yefes will be in the tents of shame. Shame is the ancestor of the Jewish people. Yefes is the ancestor of Greece. So the beauty of Greece has a place. Where does it have a place? It doesn't have a place if it's viewed as an intrinsic value. If it's an intrinsic value, it can lead to the worst possible things. But it has a place, be'al Hashem, if it's incorporated in that deep meaningful life of shame. So then there's a place for it, and that's what we learned from Yosef. This is what Yosef was able to do it for his entire life. At the beginning, he was misunderstood by his brothers. His brothers didn't understand what is this? Because for most people, for people, lesser people than Yosef, people who don't have this ability to constantly focus on the internal. By focusing so much on the external, you can be taken off the cliff. And that's why they thought that Yosef was completely doing completely inappropriate things by focusing so much on that. But the reality is that Yosef was the one who had the ability to do that because of his midah of focusing on the internal. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us. It's going to be Hanukkah. The Hanukkah is the time to focus on these things. When we stand by the Hanukkah neiros, by the Hanukkah candles, it's something to think about. To think about the pure oil, the purity of looking deeper into things, into the deep meaning of things, because we're in a world with so many externals, and the world somehow I think the world is becoming more and more external every day with the modern technology is very, very challenging because it pulls us to the external very much. It's the, even whether it's the externals in general, just to always looking at things that can show up on a screen, which is by definition external, and what that does to interpersonal relationships, which is missing the internal bond between people, and so on and so forth. There's so many challenges in that way. So I think we so desperately need Hanukkah. Hanukkah is our lifeline to remember that. Yeah, there's a place for the externals. You don't have to throw out all the externals. No, we shouldn't throw out all the externals. We need them. But the only way that we can keep our bearings without getting distracted by the externals is by focusing on the little pure Hanukkah lights and grabbing onto that and holding onto that for dear life and having that permeate everything we do. Thank you. Thank you all. Have a great night.